of May, the year 2007. We are continuing from where we left off last week at the bottom of page 60B in Avodah Zarah, Daf Samach, Amud Beis. Now going to continue with the last five, six lines on the page over there. All right. It begins with the quotation of the Mishnah about the guy who is notal chavis. Remember, the guy became very angry, so he grabbed hold of a barrel, zraka b'chamosei, right, and in his anger he threw it, the bar, into the cistern in which, you know, the wine was, right? And then it says,
barrel?
Huh?
An empty barrel?
We don't know whether it was empty or full.
We don't know.
No. But the question is, you know, about the wine in the cistern, in the bar. I mean, the question is whether that wine is now, is it now, Yai Nesach or not? Because, you know, the guy has thrown something into it. So the question is, I mean, does this mean that therefore, because it's like touching it,
right,
or not touching it?
It could have been anything.
This is what the question is, right? You're right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And then it says, Zohaya Masa, right? This is a deed that happened. The Hikshiru, they said it's okay. You can use the wine. Well, we'll find out that it's not so simple. Okay. Abba Ravashi, so Ravashi says, Kol Shemazov Tomei Be'evet Kechovim Eisa Yai Nesach. Kol Shemazov Tahor Be'evet Kechovim Eider Eisa Yai Nesach.
It's the same Ravashi that you quoted from the Pirkei Avos?
He's not in Pirkei Avos, Ravashi. No. He's in the Gemara loads of times, but not in Pirkei Avos.
Okay,
I'll tell you why. Pirkei Avos represents the views of the Tanoim, in other words, the teachers of the Mishnah. So those are the people who were quoted over there. Whereas Rav Ashi was a Lamora. I mean, he lived in Babylonia and he was quoted.
Pirkei Avos is from the earliest time.
Much earlier, much right, early. Absolutely.
Pirkei Avos is part of the Mishnah.
It's part of the Mishnah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Except
to
the second century.
Right, right. Yes. Well, 200.
Yeah.
I guess technically it's the beginning of the 3rd century, so whichever way you want to count it. Okay. Alright, so he comes in with a generalization, and this generalization says that where we find that a Zov who is unclean therefore renders whatever he touches unclean, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, we find that the same thing would hold true
for
a guy with Yadnesach. Okay, if he touches it, then that's it, right? And Kol Shem Azov Tahor, whereas wherever, in the case of a Zov, it does not make it Tomei, it still remains Tahor. Then in that particular case, then in the case of the idolater, it's not going to make the wine into Yain Nesach, right? Sounds good. But first of all, it needs explanation, and then we'll see that Tosfos has a question on it, okay? All right. First of all, what is this of? That, you know, so I mentioned it at the end of last session. A zav is a person who has discharge from his genital organs. Of course, the feminine is a zavor. I mean, there are similar rules that apply also to a zav and to a zavor. There are some differences, but there are also, you know, certain general rules that apply. And part of the general rules is that if you see an emission which has no business being there, and it happens 2-3 times or something like that, and particularly on the third time, so already then you are considered a zav. Once you're a zav, then whatever you touch becomes unclean. Okay? But what is the problem that we have over here? Remember, what started this discussion, this particular paragraph? The guy didn't actually touch the wine. What did he do?
He threw something into it.
So, okay, so if that's the case, so the question is, you know, so did he make it Yain Nisach as a result of that or not? You understand? All right. I want to go over
the barrel that went into the water.
Right.
Yeah,
what's that water?
Wine.
Wine. I mean, we're talking, you know, the system that collects the wine from, you know, where they tread it up, you know, the upper portion. Then it goes out into the bore where it gathers together.
So it's like a secondary touch.
Right. So, Tosfos comes in and it says, Kol Ikaro Shel Klal Zeh Lo Bo Ela Lahatir Zerika. It says, this generalization has only one purpose, meaning, you know, Rav Ashi's statement. But, he says, it's in order to permit the throwing, to say that if you throw something, it does not what? Doesn't make it Yain Nesach.
I'm sorry?
It does not make it Yain Nesach.
Okay.
All right.
Nesach means?
Remember, we said it means literally wine used for libation by the goyim. But, you know, that means goyish wine, period.
Okay.
Although, as I have to tell you, you heard the maisa that Rabbi Edelman gave tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't hear it. Okay.
It's not very high, but I couldn't hear it.
Yeah, okay. At any rate, we use this term Yain Nesach, but in reality it should really be Stam Yainam. Stam Yainam. What is Stam?
Ordinary.
All right, we know that. Okay, so Stam Yainam, because the goyim today are not idolaters. Maybe the Hindus are idolaters or something like that, you know. But as far as, you know, the Christians or the Arabs or the Muslims, they're not really idolaters. So, but still, we don't use their wine. So why don't we? Because we say that Stam Yainam is also prohibited to us. In other words, Jewish wine we don't use, period. That's all we want to use, only Jewish wine. Yeah. So, so what Tosfos is saying over here is that there are differences between a Zov and between the idolater, the Evelazer of Edesara, the Goy. Because he says, Shaharei Zov HaMesit Yayin Nitma. He says, for example, if a person is a Zov, okay, and he moves an object, doesn't have to be necessarily with his hands. It could be, let's say, that he took a cloth and he moved it. But even so, once he moves it, automatically what happens?
Tomei.
Becomes tomei. Whereas, what do we say? Or it gives another example. Imnoiso al sefo. Let's say that he carries, you know, an object on his shoulder. Okay? Then in that particular case, even if he put it, whatever he's carrying, he carries it in a container. All right, let's say a container made of stone. Could be a stone jug or
whatever.
Something like that, you know. Normally we say that stone is not, it does not, it's not Mikado Tuba. In other words, it can't make it Tobi, okay? So, naturally, it would mean that, you know, whatever is inside does not become Tobi, okay? However, in the case of the Zov, he says that even if he carries it on his shoulder, even in a stone container, even so, the contents would become Tobi, okay? So, right. So, does this same reasoning apply to the Levi Aveda Zora as far as the wine is concerned?
Right.
The answer, according to Tosfos, is no. Okay?
That's really clear.
Yeah. But Evit Kachamim says, Hesed Mutar, if you just, if the guy simply moves something, remember we had a business where he had a flask which he was carrying which had wine, and there's a question there only whether it was full or it was missing, but at any rate the opinion was that it's permissible. So there it's already, we see that, you know, it's a different ruling. The gam, now here's another thing with the zav. Gam yashav alecha vis, right? Lo menascho. Well, the zav coming. Let's say a zav sits on a barrel. If the zav sits on a barrel, the Torah says, you know, that kol ha-merkov, Merkov, Boshov, and so on, right? Mishkov, wherever he sits or he lies down or something like that, the tov, then automatically the zav makes it tony. Whereas this does not apply to the Eved of the Torah. So the question is then, so why does Rav Ashi make a statement, you understand, when there are definitely differences between the law pertaining, you know, to the zav as compared to the law pertaining to Aved Azor, you understand? This is what Tosfos is asking. So the answer, of course, that they say, that they come to is that in the final analysis, you know, that here, you know, he came and he threw it in. So now we have to see under what circumstances did he throw it in, because remember, there is a word that is that happens to be in parentheses, b'chamose, but that's a very important word. Why it's in the word? Because there are different readings in the Mishnah, you understand. But b'chamose implies that he did it in his anger.
Anger, right.
In his anger. You know, like we say, v'lo yoyer kol chamose, right? The Rebbeinu Shalom should not stir up all his anger against us. Say
Rachel, right? Right. So that makes a difference.
Makes a difference. It will make a difference.
Because of his anger.
Right.
Why is that?
We'll see whether he does it deliberately or in anger. Because if he does it deliberately, okay. When he does it in anger, it means that he had no intention of doing it as part of worship of Aved Zorah. That's the point. Okay.
That's a given.
Does it in anger,
right.
It's okay.
It's okay.
Well, what about if he just walked past and accidentally?
If it were an accident, it would be the same thing. As long as he's not doing it deliberately. Right. But if he does it deliberately, then in that particular case, we suspect that he's doing it for the sake of Aved Zorah.
Very good.
Because remember, we learned, you know, that one of the actions of Aved Zorah was for the guy to stir the wine. So this is where the question comes. Okay. So Esve Rav Huda Rav Ashi. All right. So Rav Huda asked the following question of Rav Ashi. He says, "Notal es hachovis." All right. The guy took the barrel. Right. Was raka b'chamosei labor. Right. And he threw it in his anger into this system. Right. And he says, "Zeh hayom aseh b'Bet Shan." Right, that this is something. It's an actual event that took place in Bet Shan. Bet Shan, as I told you, is a city in the Jordan Valley, which had a very old Jewish community once upon a time, and we still go to take a look to see what the shul looks like over there, Bet Shan. Right. Okay. The Hechshiru, and they said that the wine was kosher. Right. The Ikshiru, but it is Bachamose, because he was Bachamose in his anger. Yes, it is kosher. It's okay. But Shalom Bachamose, no. But if he did it deliberately, not out of anger, then the answer is no. Okay, so with that, we now continue with Daf Samach Aleph, Omid Aleph. Okay? And here come the sheets for that.
If he threw it in anger, then once he gets to take the cask out of the wine, then it would be wine would not be kosher anymore, right?
Right.
By the way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That only applies to an admission. How about if someone has leprosy or something like that? Would that also apply?
Well, azov and leper are different rules.
Huh?
Leper also makes things tony. That's true, right. But, you know, as far as, for example... Right. Now, the difference, there are differences. Difference number one that's obvious. the Zav is not quarantined. The Metzora has to be quarantined. That's one big difference that you immediately
he's
see.
Right.
Exactly. And then also when it comes to the Tahara, in other words, when after he's counted 7 days and so on, that he can become clean. But with the Metzora, first 7 days is just, we say, he's Sagor, you know, he's closed up in the house arrest, so to speak. And then, if it still persists, then again, another 7 days go by, and he's Mukhlat, when they decide that definitely this man is permanently a Metzora, or at least he's a Metzora, he really has it bad, then in that case, as we say, you know, he's quarantined until the day that finally the symptoms disappear and the Kohen can come and pronounce him clean. And then, of course, whether it's the Zav or the Metzora, but there are different rules concerning the Tahara, how they became clean again. You know, they have to go to the Beis HaMikdash, they have to bring Korban and so on.
Has, yeah. As an admission, which
yeah.
is, I mean, we're not talking about as a normal.
If it's normal, then according to the Torah, you just have to take, you have to take a bath and then
yeah, well,
so
yeah,
be clean, that's all.
But
right.
You're talking about a disease kind of a thing.
Correct. Right. That's why some people think that they're talking about gonorrhea. That's what the theory of me, right. It's some kind of a sexual disease. Okay. Of course it's right. Okay.
Okay. Are we going on?
Yeah, right. So we continue with some Achalaf. He says, Hossam, he says, in the case that the latter case that we're talking about, so the ka'ozu mine yamine, in other words, the barrel just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling on. In other words, what has happened? He deliberately gave it a push, you understand? And the barrel just keeps rolling into it. But he's not doing it, shalom b'chamotzi, he's not doing it in anger. So therefore, if he's doing it deliberately, then we have to say that in that case it's also itself. Because there's a possibility, as Rashi says at the end of the commentary there, Dilma Noga, perhaps he actually touched the barrel, not just he started making it rolling, but you know, he actually touched it. If he touched it while it's shaking and so on and so forth, you understand? So in that case. So it makes a difference then under what circumstance it is. Okay? Now there's a new Mishnah. Part of it had already been quoted previously, because you know it's the nature of the Gemara itself that they'll quote Mishnayos, Baraisas, whatever it may be, Tosefta, you know, and so on. That and the previous page we had, previously, right?
That we would have had olives before Mrs. Day.
Yeah, well, that, as I told you, that's a reference to the Code of Maimonides and possibly to the Shulchan Aruch itself. There's a big difference between the Code of Maimonides and the Shulchan Aruch. The Code of Maimonides, he tried to be encyclopedic, to cover every single possible angle of Torah law, including laws of sacrifice, laws of Tara, Tuma, and so on and so forth, things that, today have very little relevance. But he felt we had to know everything on the subject matter, okay? So, and, of course, I mean, if we ever have the Beis HaMikdash rebuilt in our own days, then some of these things that we've neglected all along may have to be applied again. So that's a possibility. But at any rate, it's right a great big encyclopedia. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch, and as I told you, that the Tur actually was the grandfather of the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, deals with laws in the Talmud, of course, but as in the areas that are still practiced today. For example, I mean, the first volume over there, the or a chayim. I mean, he deals with laws. Daily prayer, Shabbos, Yontif, reading of the Torah, and things like that. The Yoredeya, the second great big volume, deals with laws of kashrus, it deals with laws of avelus, it deals with laws of Talmud Torah, and so on. Okay? And then you have the Eved Ha'eser, which deals with marital laws, marriage, divorce, etc., etc. I mean, these things happen all the time. They're still in effect, in other words. And finally, the Choshen Mishpat, if you have a Bezdin, you have to know how to question witnesses, whether you can rely upon the testimony of witnesses, how to try to adjudicate between aggrieved parties and things like that, and so on. So these are all practical laws, so therefore Rabbi Yaakov Alaturim arranged them in these four major areas. And then along came Rabbi Yosef Karo, and he wrote as a commentary, the Beis Yosef, to the Torah, and then eventually he compiled the Shulchan Aruch. But he based the compilation of the Shulchan Aruch upon the same system that the Torah itself was arranged, according to what volume, according to what paragraph, what subparagraph, and things like that, and so on. Okay. Pardon me? Okay. When the Shulchan Aruch was published by Rabbi Yosef Karo, Moshe Yisrael decided that many of the practices that we find in the Shulchan Aruch, that the Machaber, as we call him, or always Rabbi Yosef Karo, the author, right, they represent Sephardic practices, but Ashkenazic practices were different. And so therefore he added the Ashkenazic practices. And so when you take a look at it, you can easily distinguish between the two, because the text that Rav Yosef Karo wrote is printed in big letters, and the other one, what Rav Moshe Yisrael wrote, is printed in, you know, like the Rashi script and so on. So
where did Karo live?
He lived in Tzfat, right. Right. He lived in Yaakovstown. Yaakov is not his contemporary, but he's proud that he lived there. Right. Okay. So, the new Mishnah says, Habatayo Yenu Shalevet Kechovim V'Nostar V'Shuso, and Babayas, this is the way we should read it. Hapasuach toshus harabim beyesh yesh bo ezek echadam yisraelim mutar. Okay, case number one that the Mishnah deals. Okay, when I mention it, I'm sure it'll ring a bell in your memories. A guy hires a Jew to produce kosher wine for him. Right? Remember that?
Yeah, we had
it. Yeah, right. I said it was quoted already before. Okay. So, and what else does he want? He wants the Jew to store the barrels of wine in the guy's home. Okay.
His
warehouse, his home, whatever. It's his, you know, where his dwelling. Okay. So this is the story so far. And then we learned afterwards in the Gemara, you know, at that time, that if he has a lien upon it, if he lent money to the guy lent money to the Jew, so now it becomes a problem when the Jew wants to try to get the barrels of wine, you know, that he produced. And the guy is not willing to give it up without what?
Payment.
Without payment, okay. Even though, what did the guy do? What did the guy do? He wrote originally a note, if you remember, saying that I have received the money. But this was only in order to enable the Jew, you know, that it should remain technically the property of the Jew and not of the Goy, so that it could be sold to Jewish customers as kosher wine. This is the situation, right? So now what the Mishnah is saying at this particular point, okay, his home, or the place, in other words, where the barrels of wine are stored, is Pasuach the Rishus HaRabim, right? It's open to the street. In other words, people going by in the street, they can take a look inside and they see these barrels of wine. Presumably they are marked kosher or something like that. Okay? So they can see it. And we're talking about a city, Be'ir, Sheyesh Bo Ezek Kohanim Yisraelim. Okay? It's a city where both Jews and non-Jews live. Okay? So in that particular case, as long as we know that what? That the Goy is not going to try to take a taste of the wine or something like that, you know, that the wine remains sealed, so that wine is permitted to be sold to Jews. Why would the Goy refrain from it, remember?
He couldn't sell it.
He couldn't sell it. He would take a loss, exactly. He could probably, as kosher wine, it would probably command
more money.
More money than as non-kosher wine.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why, you know. So the kosher is can we rely upon this right now? But as the Mishnah now continues, what about, however, the city is a city where everybody is a goy over there? Then in that particular case, also, it's prohibited. Ad sheyeshev umeshaber, or as we have a different reading, the box reading, it goes to the box. You take a look over, see on the side over there, very tiny letters over there. You see how goes the box. These are emendations made by the box, and he says instead of ad sheyeshev umeshaber, it should be Achi Yoshiv Shomer. In other words, he has to appoint, if he appoints a Shomer, somebody to watch over the barrels of wine to make sure that, you know, in this town where the inhabitants are all goyim, so he has to appoint someone to make sure, naturally, not a goy, he has to appoint a Jew to be the Shomer. To make sure, you know, that the guy is not going to take a sip of that wine, okay? The Yain HaShomer Tzorech Liyos Yoshev HaMishamer, and it's an interesting thing, it says. The Shomer does not have to sit there 24 hours a day. Atha Pishu Yetze V'Nichnas Mutar, even though he just comes and goes and comes and goes to take a look from time to time and so, but the wine is permitted. Why is it permitted? Because we would assume that he's watching it, and the guy never knows at what time the shomer is going to come in. This is the assumption over here, okay? I hate to say it, I mean, but, you know, unfortunately, if people want to indulge in acts of chicanery, there have been cases, you know, where the mashgiach had all honesty, he felt he was doing his job coming in, and so on, it was a yotzei v'nichnas, and so on, even as it says over here in the Mishnah, right? But, you know, once his back was turned, he was no longer on the premises, you know, then they did things that they had no business being. It's a big, big problem because you have to rely upon the honesty of the people who are working over there. Not just the mashgiach, you have to rely on the honesty of the workers. Yeah, of course. I mean,
but here we're talking about sealed bottles of wine.
Yes, yes. But they're not sealed bottles. We're talking about a cask of wine. A cask of wine. Right. So a cask of wine, you know, you drill a hole in it or something, and you help yourself, you know.
Okay. You appoint a watchman, what, even if it's a town with Jews and Goyim together?
Okay, we said in a town where there are Jews and Goyim living together.
You don't need it.
And, no, hold it. It said also it's Pasuach L'Rishus HaRabim. In other words, it's open to the public that people are always going by there and they can look. Well, presumably, since Jews are passing by all the time too, so they can take a look, you know, they look inside and see what's going on over there. You understand?
Uh, understand.
Right, right. So that's why it says that over there. But in the Goyish town, you can't rely upon it.
Yeah, 100%
right. So that's why you have to appoint somebody who will be the Mashgiach over there and watch it. Okay, yes. Yes.
The major premise is that it's forbidden because the Oved Kohanim may use it in a religious sense, may use the wine. Now,
correct.
What is, let's say, like rolling a barrel, or before we had somebody that was like a sealer of weight and measures who would
something
into the wine. Yeah. Even in the case that you do, which is even greater, somebody that drills a hole in the wine and take, as you say, maybe puts a straw. What does that have to? Why is that? What was the reason for it being prohibited? You kind of feel instinctively it should be prohibited, but what is the exact reason? Because none of these things have anything to do with religious practice.
Okay, you ask a very good question. The answer is that with the Yain Nesef we want to be very, very careful. And so therefore we'll go an extra mile in order to make sure, you know, that that's what it boils down to, right.
Isn't that comparable to modern times where you couldn't have a non-Jew pouring at a function? You wouldn't have a non-Jew
pouring right. This is the reason why Yain Mevushel became so popular, you know. Yeah. Okay, continue with the Mishnah right now. Okay, Rab Shimon ben Elazar Omer, that Rishus Ovdei Kehovim Achasi. This is a very strange expression, because what it says is that the resource, in other words, the area or the something like that, the domain, the area, whatever you want to say, okay, as far as Goyim are concerned, it's all one.
I don't know what that means.
And Rashi doesn't explain it, says he'll talk about it later on. So I'll tell you right now, I don't want to keep you in suspense.
I won't be able to sleep tonight.
Okay. The Gemara is going to bring out that in an area where they're all goyim over there, okay? So the fact that he puts it, let's say, in A's home, all right, to watch, doesn't mean that maybe A won't go and stick it into B's home. And then the question is, so maybe B is helping himself, or maybe A and B are both helping themselves because they moved it. So that therefore,
the
goyim, right. Exactly. So the question is, then can you trust it once it's been moved from its original place or not? So that's why he says it's one reshus, it's like one big, great big domain, and as we'll see, the suspicion is that one is covering up for the other. One goy covers up for the other.
It is, you can't trust the goy.
That's what he feels. That's what the Gemara will bring out. Right. Very difficult.
Goy in those days referred to.
He was an idolater, right, exactly, right, right.
I'm thinking what we were talking about, the Goyim, today's Goyim.
Today's Goyim are not idolaters, at least, as I said,
the
Christians and the Muslims
are that. They have found a lot of problems with the Talmud saying that it was anti-Christian.
Yeah.
It was not anti-Christian, it was anti-Avodah Zarah.
Right.
What I don't understand is why the Jewish community doesn't come forward in these cases to eliminate that kind of misunderstanding. I've never seen a response.
I'll tell you the truth. I mean, to the average guy, what do they know about the Talmud? And unfortunately, there have been scholars, Goyish scholars, who have misrepresented everything.
Yeah.
if they could read Aleph Beis, so they thought they were already experts in the Hebrew language and that sort of thing. Right, right, right.
You talked about recognition of the new moon. There were parts of the discussion that said you couldn't trust the Christians, and they named the Christians. This time you had the early.
Well, they were talking about the Kusim. Yeah, right.
The
or the Minim. Yeah.
In terms of, he would say, "Come and say that there was a new moon, and there wasn't a new moon." And so
look
at
right, right.
So they take it out of context when it had to do with a particular time in history. You're talking about at that particular time, that's the way it was.
Yeah.
Well, I
have to tell you also, right.
But they are specific to the time and place.
There are also a couple of references here and there in the language of the Talmud about Yeshua Dotri, about, you know, Jesus. But all of these texts that we have over here, they were censored by the Christian government. And so they were taken out. They didn't want to have any reference over there. Because certainly they didn't want any uncomplimentary reference over there. So we don't have Benar texts. Just there are some very old manuscripts of the Talmud that escaped the censorship, so that we can, you know, if we can do a little research and discover that, you know, what are the missing passages or something like that. Okay. So we continue now with the rest of the Mishnah.
Bloomberg was not Jewish, right?
Pardon me?
Bloomberg, who arranged the Talmud so that each...
Oh, Bloomberg?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. It was not Jewish. Right. Yeah. But, you know, actually the whole business, the invention of printing, was what made possible the spread of books everywhere, because until that time, everybody had to rely upon manuscripts. And manuscripts, you know, depends upon the person who writes it, whether he knows how to copy it, whether what he's copying from, you know, another manuscript, whether he reads it correctly, and things like that, and so on. Amatahir yeinu shalevet kechovim benosto. This is what we actually was quoted the last time that we had it, okay? Amatahir yeinu shalevet. We're still in the Mishnah. Yep. You know, this is the story that we had. I mean, that the Jew produced wine which was tahor for the goy in order to sell it, right? But that's no issue. So they put it into the goy's domain. All right. The lower case of loy and the latter, meaning, you know, the goy writes a note, right? His kabalti mimcho boris, right? I have received the money from you, you know, for the, in other words, I paid you, okay? So, mutar, then in that particular case, it is permissible, because the Jew can what do, what can he do? He can take it out, right? And it means, you know, that the goy is willing that it should be sold as kosher wine, right? Avolim yitzu yisrael ha'otzi v'yedu manicho achi yitay lo ha'otzot. But when the Jew wants to take the barrels out in order to sell them, right, so the guy doesn't let him until actually he collects his money from him. And Zahaya Masav Beit Sha'an, this happened in Beit Sha'an, the Osru, and they prohibited it. Now, if you take a look on the previous page, you'll see something, Zahaya Masav Beit Sha'an, they don't say, right, or what does I say? It says the Yikshiru, right? The Yikshiru. So we have two different readings. One says that they said it was kosher to use to sell the wine, right? And the other one say that it is prohibited to sell the wine, right? Right, in Beit Sha'an. So obviously we're going to have to figure out what the heck is going on over here. Okay. All right. So the Gemara continues. It says, "Be'ir shekuloi dekechovim nami." Right. And first of all, he says, all right, even the city where they're all goyim, likewise what? The answer is, likewise, we said, if you appoint the shomer and so on, so that it would be all right. But they say, okay, how about, even if it's an all goyish city, but maybe Jews do come in from time to time, this is what the Gemara is going to say, aren't there peddlers who come around, Jewish peddlers, they go to these goyish areas and they go from place to place, so obviously if they're going to from one town to another looking, so they're bound to do what? To see the wine, and therefore what? How will the goy feel? Will he be afraid to chepe or not to, right? This is what the question is. So Omar Shmuel, so Shmuel gave the following answer. He says, the year Sheyesh lo l'saim of Riach. He says, in a town which has literally gates and a bar to bar the gates. In other words, I'm sure you've seen gates to a city in Europe or something like that. Even there in Israel, they have also some places, you know, where you have old gates to the city. For example, I remember once we went down to Jericho and you could see the gate to the city. So, and obviously, what do they do at night? They lock the gate, right? And, you know, they put a bar over it so in order to prevent anybody from coming in, right? So the question is, over here, if this is the case, right? Well, let's take a look at the Rashi for a moment. Rochli says, Mochin b'somim. He says, first of all, who are these peddlers? He says, these are peddlers who go around peddling perfumes. Somim. The Yisrael name. And we're talking about Jewish peddlers, okay? Over in the year, right? They go from one city to another. But Mirtas Oyvet Kechovim, Dilbo Kosuli, there are Krishus or other. And the Goy is afraid that maybe when the Jew went by in the street, and we're talking about where, you know, remember we said that the house in which it was kept is open to the street, so maybe in that particular case, because Jews are also going by in the street and they can see it, so maybe then the goy would be afraid, right? So what about the Shmuel statement, you know, a town that has the Sayyim for Riyadh. So Rashi says, She'enich dasin bo elabishus. Says, in such a town, you must have permission in order to come in. Why do they have gates and so on? In order to make sure that, you know, they can control who comes in and who cannot control. Okay? V'kulayana yadei ki ayaribor. So, once you have a control like that, then everybody in such a town, of course, we're not talking about a city the size of New York, we're talking about, you know, a shtetl, okay? So, everybody, as soon as somebody comes in, so everybody knows that somebody, you know, somebody's coming to town. Matzei lemekim alor ha'hishata. And so, therefore, you know, they maybe they could figure out at what time, for example, a Jew might be passing by or something like that. So in other words, what we're saying over here is, even though in the city which is inhabited by goyim, and even though it's kept in a public place, right, where a Jew may possibly come in, but can we really rely upon it without somebody who's there as a full-time mashgiach? That's the question, right?
You know, anybody, you know, casual people,
right?
Just you know, any people. It's not anybody that wanders into the city. So anybody coming into the city, they'd already know who it was.
Right. Correct.
So in other words, if they wanted to take liberties, they feel very free to take liberties.
Of course, because as she said over there, you know, they know these people come in, but obviously, even though they're going by, they can figure out who, when, and when they pass by, then they'll do whatever they want to do. See, that's right. Right. Yeah. So, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef says that the Chalon Kirishus HaRabim Dome. He says that if the place is not an open door, the way we mentioned in the Mishnah, but there's a window in which you could look through, so it's as if the same thing, you know, that's open the street. Of course, we're talking now back again to what the first one we said, that if the town has a mixed Jewish population and Goyish population, then in that particular case, presumably the Jews are looking out to make sure. And if there's a window, so it's tantamount to the same as if it were an open door over there. The Ashpo Kirishus Rabbi Domi. And likewise, a garbage heap is also the same. Rashi says, because derech ashpo la'abed b'nei olam oleh, says people have a tendency to none of these things can be done if they have to be done during the day as prescribed. They cannot be done prior to, that's what it means over here, prior to Neitzachama. Or Neitzachama is the expression, but people simply talk about Neitz. Okay, or Neitzachama. What do we mean by Neitzachama? Or Neitzachama? It means that time when the sun begins to flourish in the sky. Sits in the flower in the sky, okay?
Daybreak.
But what it means is, this is sunrise. This is really sunrise, okay? Right. So, it should not be done before sunrise, okay? The chulon she'osu b'shul amud ha'shachar kosher. However, any of these activities, if they were done prior to sunrise, but after the time that the morning star appears, then you would be yotze, you would be in fulfillment. Okay.
That's really much more lenient.
Yeah. So, you know, there is a time span between the time that the morning star appears in the sky and it's still quite dark outside at that point. Okay? And the time when the sun actually rises. Now, we know, of course, that in the interim period, it gets gradually lighter and lighter in the sky, and then eventually, you know, you're able to begin, as the Gemara and the Bracha says, you know, you can recognize, let's say, a person whom you're familiar with, right? Or you can tell the difference between a dog and a wolf or something like that, and so
if you remember,
right,
blue and green,
exactly, and so on, right.
These
are all different things. Now, these are all different stages, in other words, that, you know, it becomes more and more light so that you're able to recognize, and therefore it means that this is already the start of day, even though officially you should wait till sunrise for the start of the day. I'll come to that in a minute. Okay. But first let me say, right, I mean, I heard David talking about what he saw at the Kotel. There are the Gemara and Brachas. Oh, you heard of it only. Okay.
You've probably seen it.
Okay. The Gemara and Brachas recommends that Kriya Shema in the morning should be recited just prior to Neitz HaChama, and precisely at the moment of Neitz HaChama, this is when you begin the Shmona Esrei. This is recommended. So that, therefore, you'll find that many, you know, strictly frug communities, that you'll find that there is what they call a Neitz Minyan. People personally get up in order that they should be able to fulfill the mitzvah in the proper time. It comes from the word tzitz, which means flower. Because there is another word, netz in Hebrew, as a noun. Netz means a hawk.
Nitzan,
right. This is a blossom, right. Right, okay. But not to be confused with the word netz, which means a hawk.
Yeah, right, correct. That's a good point. Right. I never thought of that, right.
Like on these buses that leave from Muncie at 5 in the morning in the winter.
Yeah.
So they can't say Shemona Esrei until when they first get on the bus.
Right, right.
Right.
Yeah, there are buses that are adapted, you know, that they can daven on the bus itself.
Exactly. They leave too early, actually.
Right, right.
So Nate Sama, you're supposed to, I'm sorry. You wait till Shimon Esra.
Right. Yeah. Naturally, if we were not around at that particular time, then in that case, you'd make the best of the situation. But this is the most desirable time for Davening Shabbos. Okay.
And some fast start, like.
Okay, the fast starts with Amud HaShachar, not with sunrise, but it begins with when the morning star appears. Okay.
You got to get up earlier.
Right.
You
want to
have breakfast. You got to get
right,
up
right. So that therefore, for example, when I calculate these things, so I calculate it on the basis that I look first to find out when the sunrise. Then the recommended time is 72 minutes prior to sunrise is Amud HaShachar, okay? And then I usually allow 2 or 3 minutes before, just to make sure that you're not going to run overtime or something like that. Okay.
Yeah.
But there are others, you know, that are even stricter than I am. I have to tell you. I figure it's enough. You're using with my calculation too. I say there are those who are even fussier than me. For example, let's say Shavuos and Matzah, which I said you have to begin fasting at 4 in the morning. They say stop about 3:35 or something like that in the morning. Okay. All right. So, yeah. Right.
Well,
it's
okay.
Yeah. Okay. At any rate, all right. So we have established then that all these activities have to be carried on during the day. And when does the day begin? Begins with Honetzachama, recommended time, right? Sunrise. But if you had to get up earlier and you did it any time after the morning star appeared in the sky, then in that case you are Yotze, you have fulfilled the mitzvah. Okay. So now they want to show where do we know, you know, from the Torah that these activities have to take place during the day. Okay? Manala, how do we know this? What is the source for this? So it says, the Omakra, all right, the first one that they discussed, remember, is the reading of the Megillah. They said that the reading of the Megillah during the day, you cannot do it any earlier than what? Than Netzachama, technically, right? But if you had done it any time, you know, after the Amud HaShachar, then you would be Yotze. You understand? But how do we know, you know, the Megillah must be read during the day? Because it's written, V'hayomim o'ele, right? And these days, Nizkorim and Asim, right? Are to be remembered and are to be observed. And we already interpreted several dapim back that Nizkorim and Asim refers to the reading of the Megillah and the fulfillment of the other mitzvahs of the Purim, as for example, Matanos Levyoinim, right, to give gifts to the poor, or to Mishloach Manos, that's been doing the day. It's not really right to give Shalach Manos at night. Shalach Manos should be given during the day, okay. Better to give than not to, but technically there's no question. I mean, that the mitzvah of giving Shalach Manos is really a daytime mitzvah, okay? All right. So, if it says Hayamim O'Ela Niskor Nasim, so it's by Yom, In, right? Yes, if it is during the day, but Balayla, Lo, at night, no. Remember, the word in Aramaic means yes. It means yes. And it looks so much like the Hebrew word, which is just the opposite of meaning, the negative, right? But, okay. So it says, Leimor, is this to say, Tehaveh to Yuftun, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi? Is this in contradiction to the opinion given by Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, the young Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, he said, Chayev Adam Nikos has Megillah Balaylov, the Shnoisa Bayoim. He said, you have to read the Megillah at night and to repeat it again during the day. So, it says, the Gemara concludes, Ki Katani Adyon, what we're talking about over here is the mitzvah of reading the Megillah during the day. That it has to be during the day. But there's no question that what? That you have to read it both at night and then repeat it again by day. There was a whole discussion that we had earlier in the Masechta about this, okay? Because some often say maybe the Shnosa means simply to study the text or something like that rather than to read it. But when do we prove that the word Shnosa over here is from the root of, you know, Shnayim, Shnei, Shnei, and so on, you understand? In other words, Shani, you know, they're all the same root, you know, meaning, you know, second. Okay, you have to read it second time during that. Velo Molin, now how do we know that you're not supposed to perform a bris except during daytime? So it says, Dichtir, the Pasuk says, what? Uvayom Hashmini Yimol Besar Loso, that on the eighth day after he's been born, the flesh of his foreskin has to be circumcised. Okay. V'loy tovle v'loy matzin, and how do we know that the tefillah that we're talking about in connection with tumah, right? Or the sprinkling that has to be undergone, how do we know that they are both daytime activities? Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, v'hizo hator al tomei, right? That the Kohen, who happens to be in a state of purity, has to sprinkle the Tomei, the person, you know, who has been made impure, by Yom HaShviyi, on the seventh day. So that inasmuch as it says, you know, he's on, so on, so is Krishna. And we make a comparison between both the immersion and also the sprinkling. All right. Then the Chen Shemes Yom Keneged Yom, Lo Sidbal Ad Shoton Nisachama. How do we know in the case of this woman that we said, who is seeing whether she has a clean day after going through a period of, her normal menstrual cycle and so on. So she cannot, in this particular case, immerse herself until the sun shines. So Peshitta, this is obvious. Why? Why should she be any different than all the others, you know, who are obligated to toil themselves? So the answer is, Itzarech. No. I need a special teaching for her. Why? Because Sal Kodate Echamina. You might think that I should say that the comparison is to the first time that a Zov, the man who has a flow from, his flesh. We usually think it's like a gonorrheal flow or something like that, okay? Yeah, he's a Zav. No. We're not talking about seminal fluid. We're not talking about that. We're talking about that, but in addition, there's something coming out of it. It's white in appearance, it's a liquidy, it doesn't look right. It doesn't look like what semen should look like, okay? So, the first time that Azov sees it, right? Of course, it becomes unclean. But Rishonah Shalzov is Krishna Valkyrie. However, the first time that Azov notices it is compared to the same case as a person who has a seminal emission. Dichsiv, as it is written, the Zos Taras Hazov, right? This is the law both for the man who is suffering from Ziva, right? And also, where Shechva Zera, in other words, you know, seminal fluid comes from him. So, and Ma Balkeri Tegel Bayoim, just as somebody who, a man who has had a seminal emission, immerses himself during the day, so Hainame Mitbo Biyome. So the Zov also can immerse himself in the day. So, the Hobi Imamav, however, during the daytime, we cannot find that she is permitted to do it, because for her there's a different pasuk. Dixiv, the Pasuk says, Kol Yimei Zova, all the days that she is in this state of gonorrhea, so to speak, it's Kemishkav Nidaso Yiyela. It is, it's as if she were in a state of, Nida. Okay, and Nida, remember, requires not less than 7 days, okay? So, they say, Balayla Bihas, the Ovid Mitzah Shimur, but maybe at night she should be able, to see and sit well, and she should tevel herself at night. So, Kamash Balon, from this we learn, Kevin the Baya Spira, it is much, as she also has to count how many days it is. And in that particular case, okay, next sheet. Okay. Sphira biyamomahi. We find that counting is also a daytime activity, because we say 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, etc. So this is okay. All right. Then the Gemara continues with discussion the next part of the Mishnah, which says, "V'kulon she'osu mishola b'dashachar kosher." But in all these cases, if the morning star has already appeared, then it is valid, right? So, how do we know this? So again, we're going to see there are differences of opinion. What is the source in the language of the Bible for this? So, Omar Rava came up with the following. He said, "The Omar Krat, the Pasuk says, Vayikra Elohim Lahor Yom. God called the light day. In other words, the Meir Vakra Yom. In other words, as it gets lighter and lighter, so that is already day." Okay? We're on Chav. Yeah. On the base. 20B. We're on 20B now.
Oh, so you turn it more.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, yeah, I left you behind, Helen. Sorry.
Where is yours?
20B1. 20B1.
20B1. I got
20B.
Okay.
I don't know
if
it
was
or
two.
Yeah,
the other this.
Right.
40 is okay?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking at the right words. Okay.
So, all right. So, in other words, Rava said then that because God called the light day, right? So, as it gets lighter and lighter, it is day, even if it's what? Prior to sunrise. Get the idea?
Yeah.
Even though it's prior to sunrise. So, Elaviato, so the Gemara raises an objection. So, yeah,
same,
that's,
excuse me,
yeah.
You gave me the same one.
Oy vey, yeah. Oy vey.
I'm saying I don't know.
Oy vey. I thought I'd be prepared.
If it's not light yet.
Yeah.
You're talking about the Shahar?
I don't think so. No, I'm not sure about that. Does that say 40 on top?
40, yes, it does.
Let me see.
Yeah, and that's it. Right. Okay, okay, my apologies.
I mean,
Bill?
Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that
it? Does it start with Sephira?
I think it's
good. Where's Sephira?
We're talking about the morning star or the first rays of sunlight.
This is the one.
All right, what we're saying is that once it begins to get light,
so automatically,
even though it's not yet sunrise, but nevertheless, it's already valid if you perform the mitzvah at that particular time. That's what we're saying. Uh-huh. Okay?
In other words, you see light coming, but the sun hasn't risen yet.
That is correct. Right. You know, take a look. You see, first the sky begins to get lighter. Okay,
yeah.
You know, look in the east and so on. You see that,
right?
And then gradually, more and more light. As far as the earth is concerned, even though it's not daylight.
Is that the same time when you'll be saying the Shema?
Yeah.
Well, sure, correct. Maybe.
Because as we said, you do it just prior to sunrise. Okay. You know. Ideally, right?
Ideally.
So that would be so, right. So he objects, however, they object to this interpretation of Rava. They say, Hello, Beata, if that's the case. So what's the rest of the pasuk? Says, Well, Achoshach Karalila, right? In other words, it should be interpreted as it gets darker and darker. It's already night. Okay? It's in parentheses, in Achoshach Karalila, but that's what it means. So it says Hokai Melon, but don't we have a teaching which says that Atzei Sakoichovim Lav Lailahu, that until the stars actually appear, it is it's not an idea. Don't have to tell you that this is a tremendous problem, but I'll come back to that in a moment. Okay. Elo Omar Rabbi Zeira, but Rabbi Zeira said, I have a different pasuk. He says for you. This is taken from the book of Nehemiah, the book of Nehemiah, okay, where it relates how Nehemiah got the work organized so that they could begin rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, even though the enemies of the Jews were causing all kinds of tzoras and attacking them. Okay? Sounds. Right. So the pasuk says, V'adachtu oisim b'blocha, we were doing our work, right? The chetzim, half of the people, Malsikim Bermachim, were holding on to their spears, Me'alos Hashacha Atzei Sakol Chavim, from the time that the morning star appeared, right, until the time that the stars appeared in the evening, okay? In other words, from early in the morning till early at night, right? The Omer, and it says furthermore, Lono Halayla L'Nishmar, right, that the night is for us in order to do guard duty. So Maiva Omer, now why I have to add the next part, V'chi Teimor, should you say Mishaolah Mudah Shacha Lav Yimoma, if you want to argue that when the morning star appears it's still not day, right, U'mechi Arba Shimsha Laila, and if you want to say that as soon as it begins, as the sun begins to darken, so to speak, it's night, the Innu Mekadmi Machshuche, and they would start their work early, right, and finish when it got dark. So Toshma, this is the reason why it says, Lanu Alayla Mishma Vayom Melocha, that the day, that the night is for God duty, and the night, and the day for doing labor. Okay, I just want to finish with this problem of times with davening that we have, okay? There are ideal times, and there are times in which you're yotze, okay? In other words, if you did it, you at least fulfilled the mitzvah, okay? As we see, I mean, just as in the case, you know, where Rabbi Yehuda is mashal b'katan, it says, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, a katan is also right, but then they said that that's not the ideal situation, and so they wouldn't accept it on that basis. With morning services, okay, the time technically is from Netzach Hama, from sunrise, okay? Netzach Hama, right, that's the technical beginning of the day, as I said, technical, okay? Until Shkia, which is the time when the sun sets, just dips by below the horizon, okay? That's daytime.
That's the end of daytime.
Right, that's the end of daytime. All right, so that being the case, then what we do is to divide the time between Netzach Hama and Shkia by 12, and that gives us the hour for that particular day. Every day has a different hour, depending upon how many, you know, when it's sunrise and when it's sunset. That's why I have to always go to these astronomical tables in order to figure out, you know, when it's Lichtbenchen, when does a fast begin, when does a fast end, and things like that, and so on, okay? Because obviously it varies, you know, from day to day and from season to season, of course, very much so. Yeah. So, that being the case, then we go back to the Gemara and Brachas that we learned. What did we learn in the Gemara and Brachas? There we learned that Kriya Shema, while it should be recited, as we said, just before Netzach Hama, but nevertheless, you have the first 3 hours of the morning.
Is that the first watch?
Well, if you wish. I mean, the march is being mentioned during the night rather than during the day. Okay. Yeah. But, yeah. But, of course, the first 3 hours doesn't mean 180 minutes on our time. It means 180 minutes according to the time of that particular day, okay? That should be the ideal time for any time, but then you still have fulfilled, you know, the bracha, etc., you know, saying Shema Yisrael, okay? Shemona Esra, you have an additional hour. You have through the first 4 hours, okay? The truth of the matter is, however, what happens if you didn't have a chance to do it earlier, for whatever reason, then in that case, you have really up to noon. Up to noon, you'll still get some credit for it. Okay? You won't get an A for the course, but you'll get the chvayis, a B, a C, whatever it may be. Okay?
Right. It's 5 and 12, you know.
Okay. Now, right. We'll learn again what the Gemara said. It's not mentioned over here, but it will be mentioned shortly again that they'll.